Nothing in this show should be considered legal, medical, financial, or investment advice. Information presented is from internet or other news sources. Always do your own research and due diligence. We're not responsible for and expressly disclaim all liability for damages of any kind arising out of use, reference to, or reliance on any information contained in this broadcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to Money and Change right here on the Trim Radio Network. We're live every Sunday, unless it's concert season, and I warned you about that. Anyhow, guys, welcome to Money and Change right here on the Trim Radio Network, better known as trimradio.com. And we have a lot of different shows that are online, and we go all over the world. I've got listeners in Myanmar, South Africa, India, who knows, maybe even Pakistan. I don't know. Also, I've got them in Europe and North America. So we're on the World Wide Web, and that's the way we like it, because we can go everywhere. Anyhow, without any further ado, a big shout out to the Trim Radio Network for carrying the show. And you know, we have a different setup on the Trim Radio Network. If you go to that page, you're going to see something totally different. And here it is. And you'll notice that we have my good buddy, Rascala Stefan. And he's just done his show. As soon as my show's over with, it will be posted at trimradio.com for everybody to watch. But I also put it out on YouTube and Rumble. So you can go to either one, look for the live broadcasts, and we'll be there. So you can go back to our Facebook page, and I will have the show posted there on our Facebook page, Money and Change / Financially Prepped. And so you can see what we do here. And we have a lot of merchandise. Buy the merchandise because it helps keep the show on the air. We don't get paid for doing the show. And what we do is create the content and put it up there, but the airtime is expensive. And so any of the funds gathered from the purchase of our water bottles, hoodies, t-shirts, whatever, even clocks, those happen to be, the funds from that happens to be put back into the business here to pay for airtime, because none of us are getting a paycheck. We don't want a paycheck. We want to help people. We tell the truth and cut the bull. Okay. So with that, a big shout out to Michael Bejas and Rascala Stefan and Victoria Smith for letting the show be on the air. I've been doing this show for quite a while, not only with Trim Radio Network, but as another network. And I'll tell you what, I have fun doing both shows, both Money and Change and My World. And if you're going to listen to My World, I've got to tell you about some experience. Basically, being a health inspector at a festival. It was interesting. It was fun. About 200,000 people showed up. And it was an interesting time. I could tell you all kinds of things that happened there. But anyhow, we'll do that on Wednesday on My World at 8 p.m. live. Well, with that, let's go to the Money and Change Facebook page. And here it is. And you notice that all you have to do is ask, and we'll get you in there. It's very easy to join. Just send us a message. You know, all you have to do is just click on that blue circle up at the top right, and or the contact us, and put in your name and your email address, phone number, whatever. Put it in there and say, hey, I want to join the Money and Change / Financially Prep page, and I will get you on there. Okay? And with that, whoa, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, everything that we talk about will have a lead off here, and it will talk about the show. But under the comment section, everything that we're going to talk about will be posted here. All you have to do is click on those and you get the information. Very easy to do, okay? All you have to do is just join us here every Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on Facebook, Money and Change / Financially Prepped. So if you missed the show tonight, you can go to that page and the show will be posted and you can join the bunch. Wow, I changed the format just a little bit because we need to get into a lot of information here. And I give a pat on the back to, you know, all my friends. You know, I don't get paid by them. I just like to advertise them a little bit free. And I want to be able to say, hey, these guys exist. And we'll talk about the University of Findlay later on. And you know, Phil's pens over at Rusty Ducks Custom Pens and Blanks. Hey, you know, I talk about those all the time. Fantastic pens. Also, big thing that I have to tell you about, you know, bad weather is out there, you know, storms. Guess what? We have the GMRS radios. You can't beat them. $35 gets you a license for 10 years. Anybody in the family can use it as long as they behave. And with this one radio, it's an Ocean 935G Plus and a Nagoya 771G antenna. I can talk to a repeater 35 miles away, and from there I can go out another 90 miles or so, depending on the weather. Okay, good thing to have. When the phones are down, TV's not working, guess what? These radios will work. Check them out. Whoa, what is going on? A lot of stuff. There was one thing, you know, I like to talk about some critical issues here, and one of them happens to be E. coli. Oh, yeah. And this story came out from Rudy Blaylock at Epoch Times. And it's E. coli detected in ground beef products distributed to Whole Foods. And according to the article, it says certain ground beef products distributed to Whole Foods markets locations worldwide have been pulled from the shelves due to potential, I'm saying potential, E. coli contamination. According to the June 3rd U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service notice. And the alert applies to 1 pound vacuum-packed packages of organic rancher, organic ground beef, 85% lean, 15% fat, marked with use or freeze by 6/19/25 and use or freeze by 6/20/25. So the alert is for the 1 pound vacuum pack packages of organic rancher, organic ground beef, 85% lean, 15% fat. And I'll tell you what, when you have E. coli, you don't want to get it ever again because you can die from that. So you have to be very careful and check out the notices from the U.S. Department of Food, or U.S. Department of Agriculture, I'll put it that way. And you want to check them out, USDA. And I happen to know an inspector that's retired who was with the USDA, and he used to do a lot of inspections at different meat processing plants. And he could tell you different stories, but I'm not going to mention Doc's name because he would probably get angry with me. But we have dinner from time to time, and I'll tell you what, he's a very good guy, very knowledgeable. And we like to trade horror stories, if you know what I mean. But, you know, when you get your products, you want to check them out to see if they're on a recall list. All it takes is just one package, and the word gets out that, oh, it had E. coli, and the whole batch is going to be condemned. They're going to toss it. So you want to check that out. So that's the 1 pound vacuum pack packages of Organic Rancher organic ground beef, 85% lean, 15% fat, marked with use or freeze by 6/19/25 or use or freeze by 6/20/25. Okay, so that's your warning. And oh, by the way, the 85% lean and 15% fat is great for hamburgers. That's a good mix. Even 80/20 is a good mix. But if you don't like the fat that has the flavor, you can go 90/10. That makes it very lean. So you've been warned as far as E. coli contaminants. And here's the big thing. Every time you get meat, don't eat it rare. Never eat it raw. And people say, I don't eat raw meat. Well, I knew somebody that did. And they did for years. And all of a sudden, they ended up getting mad cow disease, which can be very fatal. So you want to cook your meat to at least 145 to 155 degrees Fahrenheit, because that will help kill off the bacteria. If you've cooked it before and you, let's say, have it in the refrigerator and you want to reheat it to 165 degrees. And that's usually what the health departments recommend. Okay? Whoa, I'm really edumacating everybody tonight. Well, anyhow, let's go to the next one here. It makes sense. Why are we punishing the farmers doing the right thing? Hey, those farmers, they go out and they prep their land and they plant things and they watch it grow and then they harvest it. And they're constantly looking at prices. And they need to know, you know, what chemicals to add to the soil and how to treat the soil and how to process everything. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I know a lot of farmers and they are really, really excellent people. I mean, they really know their business, and it is a business. But why are we punishing the farmers for doing the right thing? You know, the feds used to say, well, we'll pay you not to plant corn or beans or whatever. And basically, the farmers got, in quotes, free food money, okay? Free money for seed, whatever. It was free. They didn't have to plant it. Maybe it was because we had an overabundance of it. But I'll tell you what. A lot of countries feed the world. And one thing that the U.S. does, we feed people with corn and wheat and oats. And countries like Japan, China, and others buy it from us. And I'll tell you what, we have good soil and we have very good land practices. And that's why we can produce more than we eat. So why are we punishing the farmers? You know, we reward them for not planting certain things. Well, according to Molly Engelhart from the Epoch Times, she said, why is it the organic apple must wear a label, pay a certification fee, and carry a price premium, while the conventional apple grown with chemical fertilizers and synthetic pesticides is simply called an apple? What if we flipped that? What if the organic apple was just an apple and the one grown with chemicals, you know, had to be labeled chemically grown? Why does the burden fall on the farmers doing the right thing? Well, the ones using harmful practices skate by without warning or cost or consequence? That's a good question. Now, why does the farmer who's working with nature, protecting our water, preserving our soil, and nourishing our communities have to pay extra while the farmer who's polluting gets to do so for free? Why is the financial burden on the one not doing the damage? Well, our rules make it harder to farm responsibly. A chemical farmer can spray right up to the edge of their fence line, but an organic farmer must give up 25 feet on all sides and sell that buffer zone as non-organic. How does that make sense? Really doesn't, does it? Well, we claim to want cleaner food, cleaner water, and healthier planet. But the regulations say otherwise. They punish the farmer doing what is best for humanity and reward the ones taking the shortcuts that come with long-term consequences. Meanwhile, foreign-owned corporations, some with deeply troubling records abroad, are seeking permission to be traded on the U.S. stock exchange. Others continue selling toxic chemical products in the U.S. that they're banned in other countries. And then why are we operating our doors to this? And why do we reward bad actors while the honest, hardworking Americans drown in red tape? I guess it's government and red tape. It goes with government, I guess. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? What would happen if we didn't have a lot of red tape? Well, she says the system is rigged. It pushes farmers toward chemical dependency, not because they want to, but because doing the right thing is cost prohibitive and overregulated. You see the farmers spraying a lot of chemicals on the fields? A long time ago, they never did. They would use animal fertilizer. They would spread out lime on the fields if it needed it. Just natural practices. But now we have to use pesticides. We have to use other chemicals to make things grow bigger, better, denser. It's kind of crazy. Well, anyhow, consider this. Research has shown that living within a mile of a golf course significantly increases your risk of Parkinson's disease. I never knew that. I don't live within a mile. I live within a mile and a half of a golf course. So that means I can get Parkinson's disease, I guess. Well, it's because of the chemicals that are added to the soil for the grass. It's my guess. I don't know. What do you think? Well, because a wide used herbicide that's banned in other countries, yet still sold here, often by foreign companies that won't allow the use in their homeland, why do we allow that without a tax penalty or even a warning label? It's out there. And that's scary. You know, what do you do when you get food from the grocery store? Some people just throw it in the bin and then they rinse it off and eat it later on. But that really doesn't detoxify what might be on the plant itself. They might decide to use a chlorinated water at the processing plant. And that's on there, so you need to wash that off. Soak everything in water. Cold water will do. Some people say, no, you have to use a little bit of dishwashing detergent mixed in the water to wash everything. I'll tell you, you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. Just do good common practices. Wash things before you eat it. Make sure that the chemicals that are on the broccoli, the cauliflower, onions, whatever, just wash them off. And just, you know, you can take a paper towel and dry things and then go ahead and use them. That's good common sense. But why reward people who are trying to basically poison us with all those chemicals instead of having good organic stuff? I think, you know, the farmers markets, Right now in my town, the farmers markets are starting up, and it's usually every Thursday. And people like to go to those. They can get things cheaper than going to some of the big stores. And maybe it's better than going to the big stores. So, what do you think? What practices do you do when you're processing your food to prepare it at home? Okay, how about this one? Will Beijing de-dollarize or dump the U.S. Treasury debt? Well, I'll tell you guys, it's scary because we sold a lot of our debt to the Chinese. And they'd say, okay, yeah, we'll go ahead and buy it. They were making money and they were growing their economy, and they could spend some of their money and buy some of our treasury debt. But what happens when it comes due? When, let's just say $1 billion in debt comes due and we have to pay the original amount plus a percentage. Do we have that money? Are we passing bad money? Is it a scam? How many times over has the debt been sold? That's what's scary. And at any time, any country could say, okay, we're going to cash in our treasury debt. We're going to cash those bills in. We want money. And we want gold for it. Gee, when was the last time they audited the gold in Fort Knox? Didn't the POTUS 47 say, hey, we're going to do that? Did they do it yet? I don't think so. Did Elon Musk and these boys go in there and check things out? I don't think so. And it's going to be scary when countries like China or Japan or any other country that holds U.S. debt says enough is enough. We want our money. Our dollar is going to be worth nothing. Zip, zilch, and nada. Yeah, it's paper. It's fiat currency. And that was started back, I believe, around Richard Nixon's time. They basically took us off the gold standard and said, well, we can base it on other things. And we have a problem with that because it's coming back to haunt us. So will Beijing de-dollarize or dump the U.S. Treasury? I'll tell you what. This report from Milton Ezrati from the Epoch Times says, anticipating what tactics Beijing might use against the U.S. President Donald Trump amid trade negotiations, several media outlets here in Europe and elsewhere have begun to speculate that China will threaten to distance its economy and its trade from our dollar. In other words, they're going to de-dollarize in the popular parlance and perhaps sell off its extensive holdings of U.S. Treasury debt. Well, if they sell off our debt, and our value of our dollar goes very, very, very low, what happens to the U.S. buying things from China? It's a dual-edged sword. And you can't do one without affecting the other. So, you know, basically they say never act, however, is that in all likely certainty, or certainly has not an immediate bargaining chip. It's easy to see why commentators would seize on notions like de-dollarization. But Beijing is also well aware that China, as an export-dependent country, must hold dollars to back its trading activities with most nations, because most nations use the dollar. It was the petrodollar. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. And if you mess with it one way, it'll come back to bite you the other way. Well, what do you think about that? I mean, you know, China's part of the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And there are about 24 other countries that are joining the BRICS nations. And, you know, when you have that going and they decide to trade in their own currencies, so the Russian ruble could be traded for Chinese yuan could be traded, I'll put it that way, lost for words tonight, traded for, let's say, Thai baht, B-H-A-T. That would be interesting, in just trading for those, instead of using the dollar as a basis to do the trading with. Or they could go ahead and use gold, silver, and other precious metals to do the trading. And that could be a possibility. If they do that, let's say we don't know what's in Fort Knox. We have to trade in gold, and we don't have the gold. We're in trouble. The U.S. dollar would be used internally, and it may not be worth anything. I believe in the early 1900s, they had after World War I, they had the Weimar Republic. And after World War I, the German Deutschmark was worth nothing. It's basically a wheelbarrow to buy a loaf of bread. Could you imagine going to Kroger's or Wally World, better known as Walmart, with wheelbarrows of money just to get a loaf of bread? That would be a big proposition. I couldn't fathom that, but I remember seeing pictures of that. You know, people that don't learn from their history are doomed to repeat it. It's like a friend of mine said, well, he repeated it because he liked the teacher. Yeah, right. You have to understand from mistakes of the past to keep them from happening in the future. And that's a big thing. And China knows that they can't sell us anything if our money's not worth anything. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It really is. I mean, if China wanted now to just say, okay, we're going to de-dollarize everything, we want paid in gold, we're in trouble. I mean, we are in deep trouble. Because you know those cell phones? If an iPhone is going at $1,600, hey, it could be worth $3,000. And that could probably happen overnight. It's scary out there. So, like I've said, I don't know how many times over, 10, 15 years, probably 15 years, pay down your debt. Put some money aside. Buy some long-term food in case there's a food crisis. Be able to preserve and store water. At least 3 gallons per person per day. That's a lot of water. Make sure that you have the proper medicines that you need. So if you're diabetic, then you have to make sure you have enough insulin. You have to make sure that you have enough pen needles or pens or whatever you use. If you take metformin, you have to make sure that you have enough metformin that you could use. Those are pills. Or Jardiance or whatever. If you have other disabilities and you need to take medicines, you need to basically count everything up. And you know, a lot of places, a lot of pharmacies will only give you maybe a month's worth or maybe 90 days at the most. They won't stock you up beyond that. And if there's a way of doing it, then you could pay extra money from whatever source or wherever you get your meds. Some people go up to Canada because it's cheaper. But after you've gotten your meds, make sure you have a good first aid kit. Make sure you have those blue tarps to put over your roof. If there's a bad storm and your shingles come off or your roof comes off, you need something to cover it up, the blue shingle or the blue tarps can be used for tents in an emergency that where you don't have any shelter at all. So right now it's time to be prepared. That's why I talk about it on Money and Change / Financially Prepped. Part of this whole thing from now, probably for the next 10 years, is going to be, are you prepped? Do you have that food? Whether or not it's canned food, freeze-dried food, MREs, do you have seeds to grow plants to create food? You know, what do you need? Because the government's not going to save your keister. I'll put it that way. They're not going to do that. You have to make sure that you can survive on your own. So you might want to learn up on how to grow crops, how to repair things, and so forth. I mean, there are a lot of things out on YouTube where they talk about that. And, you know, David Kobler is one with, oh, gee whiz. And Amber Stork is another one, Prepper Princess. And LDS Prepper, David Gilmore, check them out. They're on YouTube. Good people, too. Wow. Nearly 25% of Americans are now functionally unemployed. And here's what harsh reality really means. And this was in Yahoo. And it said, a low unemployment rate typically signals that an economy is generally healthy. An unemployment rate in the U.S. remains near a 50-year low in April of 2025 at 4.2%. Plus, Americans' employers add 177,000 jobs in April despite the uncertainty of Trump's tariffs and trades, the trade wars. Now, I'll tell you what. When you take a look at the unemployment numbers and everything, look at the season. Summer employment is coming around, and that's why you're adding 177,000 jobs. Not only to the agricultural part, but also into manufacturing. So you want to consider that. Now, thanks to Jeff Bezos, you can now become a landlord for as little as $100. And no, you don't have to deal with tenants or fix freezers. And here's how. And this is a site you can click on and so forth. And nervous about the stock market in 2025? Find out how you can access the $1 billion private real estate fund. Only come-alongs like that, you know. But when you take a look at the unemployment, the true rate of unemployment in April, according to the Ludwig Institute for Shared Economic Prosperity, or the LISEP, was 24.3%. Up 0.3% from the previous month. And LISEP's true rate of unemployment, TRU, includes the unemployment as well as workers who are unemployed but still struggling. So what's functional unemployment? Well, what the article said for that was, so why is there a 20-point difference between the LISEP and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or the BLS? Unemployment numbers. Well, the BLS collects a massive amount of data on unemployment, but some of that data is excluded from the official unemployment rate. You know, if they would just give us the true facts and don't manipulate the numbers and say, okay, we have 24% of people here in the United States unemployed. I mean, just come out with the true numbers. You know, I think I'm a big boy. I can understand that. Just tell me what the numbers are, and then let's look for ways to correct those numbers. Well, anyhow, the LISEP uses data compiled by the BLS, but instead of simply measuring unemployment, the LISEP measures what it calls the functional unemployed. What is that? Well, that's defined as the portion of the U.S. labor force that does not have a full-time job, 35 hours a week, but wants one, has no job, or does not earn a living wage, conservatively pegged at about $25,000 a year annually before taxes. You know, there are some people out there that are working two and three jobs every week, trying to earn money to support a family of maybe two, three, four, five. Yeah. I mean, they're working that. And can you imagine? You're working 6 days a week. You only get about 4 hours of sleep. There's no time at home for the wife and the kids. You're working. And additionally, here's the wife out, and she's working maybe a part-time job or two part-time jobs, as well as trying to raise a family. And then you're having to pay out child care. That's scary. It really is. And we have inflation, and no matter how you call it, we have inflation out there. And what used to cost a dollar probably cost $2 or more. And it's scary because you have to work to have the money to be able to eat, pay your rent, be able to buy the gasoline to go to work. It's scary out there. Another article we had, FTC warns of rising student loan scams. Says fraudsters took millions from borrowers. And this was Chase Smith at the Epoch Times. This occurred in Zero Hedge. And the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, is warning borrowers to steer clear of student loan debt relief scams after shutting down a group of companies last month that allegedly charged millions of illegal fees and left customers worse off. The warning issued June 6 comes as part of the broader push by the FTC to raise awareness about the deceptive debt relief schemes targeting Americans with student loans. And you know, student loans, I think when I graduated from college, and yeah, this is for a piece back, but when I graduated from college, I only think that I had maybe $6,000 or $7,000 I had to pay. Because I worked while I was going to college. Every summer, I had a summer job that paid fairly well at the time. And I would be able to pay everything off. I didn't have a scholarship, but I was able to pay everything off. And the student loan, it was paid within a year after I graduated. And when I went to graduate school, they wanted either cash up front, or you could pay by the week, by the month, or by the semester. But if it wasn't paid, you didn't get your grades. Oh, speaking of grades, the University of Findlay. Ah, you thought I wasn't going to tell you about that. University of Findlay in Findlay, Ohio, www.findlay.edu. And your Euler journey begins at the University of Findlay. And it's one of Ohio's 10 most affordable colleges, 19th consecutive year's best colleges, U.S. News and World Report, and best colleges in America in 2024. And you know, I always tell you about that. Because they're located in Findlay, Ohio, it's an all-American city. And I'll tell you what, it's right off of I-75, not too far from Toledo, Ohio, not too far from Dayton, Ohio. It's not far from Columbus, Fort Wayne, Indiana, a lot of different places. And the University of Findlay is a very good school. It really is. And they have great facilities and great professors. One campus is the Hazardous Materials Campus. Then they have the Equestrian Campus on the other side of Findlay. I believe that's in the western side of Findlay. And then the main campus. And the main campus has a lot of the classes there. Very good facilities. And Dr. Kathy Fell does a fantastic job helping to run everything. Because I'll tell you what, she really has done a great job. So you can check them out. You know, 85 plus majors. I think it's up to 100 and something now. Those are undergraduate. Graduate school has 11 master's degrees and 5 doctoral degrees. And then they also have online learning, which is amazing because They've got the Master of Science in Applied Security and Analytics, Bachelor's Degree in Completion Program. They've got Master's in Business Administration, very good business school, by the way. Doctor of Education in School Psychology, Master of Science in Environmental Safety and Health Management, Master of Science in Health Informatics, Master of Arts in Education, Principal License Program, Distance Doctor of Pharmacy, Master of Arts in Professional Communication, and the Superintendent Licensure Program. And those are online programs at the University of Findlay. So check them out. Visit the campus, okay? You'll be glad you did. Okay, latest news. Generation Z. I'll tell you, all these different generations, you know, Generation Z, millennials, want to have kids over, have affordability worries. Let's watch this.
New survey from care.com shows Gen Z and millennials are questioning having kids with affordability and reliability as main concerns there, and especially when it comes to child care. Only 30% of adults aged 18 to 44 said they definitely want kids, while 44% say they have no desire. 68% of respondents note that the cost of raising children makes them less likely to become parents. Here to dig in is Brad Wilson, CEO of care.com. You've had a busy day. We've seen you at opening bell ceremonies.
It's been a busy day.
My goodness. Yes. Thanks for joining us back.
It's great to see you, Brad.
Let's go into the data here. Why are we seeing this as the pushback, the major pushback, as it comes to family formation as well, and the cost, where we can start to remove some of that cost from this?
Yeah, I think some of the story is not new, and then there's a part that is new, which is really the mental anguish. But we all know about the cost of care. 40% of household expenses today go to caregiving, 22% go to childcare alone. So enormously expensive. And as we've seen over the past decade, caregiving's had about a 260% increase in care, particularly childcare expenses versus, say, normal inflation over a decade of around, you know, 3% per year, you know, call it less than 100%. So exorbitant costs. I think what we're seeing now as a result of that, and don't forget, this is an access story as well. So we saw through the pandemic and COVID, a lot of childcare, daycare centers shut down. Care.com benefited mightily from that with our in-home caregiver pool. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, it's really hard to find affordable, quality childcare. So that is playing out in the mental toll we're seeing with parents and families. We've reported and see that 90% of parents are reporting losing sleep as a result of having to find and manage care. And even almost 30% reported that they've considered self-harm. So it's a really taxing time.
Well, then you also have some of the elected officials that are saying, well, wait a minute, we got this bill that's going to work its way through. It's going to give you $1,000 if you have a kid. It's going to give you access to a MAGA account, as they were calling it. I mean, some of the efforts that we're seeing get put forward don't actually address, at least from first glance and observation, the more deeper entrenched issue that you were just laying out a moment
ago. That's right. Yeah. I mean, listen, we want to applaud the administration. It is definitely on their radar. They're definitely starting to notice and address this. And I think we'll all be better as a society, as a nation, when we view this as not just cost, but a true investment in infrastructure. And so that is the work that we're trying to do day in, day out with the administration. I will remind everybody, too, the bill's not done yet. So, yes, they've given a nod to the child care tax credit. It is nice. It's going up from $2,000 to $2,500. Per child. But in fact, the Child Independent Care Tax Credit, the CDCTC, is the only mechanisms by which it goes directly towards child care. Mm. So that, unfortunately, still needs more work. And that's the work we're trying to do with this administration. And we look forward to working with them.
What type of regular communication are you able to have with either elected officials, the administration right now? What are they malleable on from what you can gauge at this juncture?
Yeah, they're quite busy, as you know. So we're really trying to get to some pre-COVID levels on the CDC, TC, as I mentioned. But we're also just trying to inform them that, hey, perhaps we can modernize some of the language. And in fact, some of these credits and refunds were thought of decades ago. So it is not caught up and modernized with inflation. So we think a good starting point is that Child Independent Care Tax Credit, But perhaps in the future, we've put forth something called a working family savings plan that can act very much like a 401k or a 401 care, if you will, that it could be pre-tax dollars put towards childcare. It can travel to and with you from employer to employer, and you don't lose it. So those are the types of ideas we're trying to put forth.
Not to ding you on what you just mentioned a moment ago, and I know that this is a common way that we kind of think about needing future generations in the future, because we say, well, infrastructurally, we need more workers, or infrastructurally, yes, we need more people to be part of the engine that drives our economy. While we also get away from remembering that familyhood and being able to have that sense of belonging and care around us as well is critical. And this is where I think a lot of future generations really have a hang up, is that we may have lost the prioritization of that in favor of economy. How do, when we see surveys like the motherhood survey and the stress factors that are being placed on mother, how do we recenter around family values, knowing that economy is only going to be driven by those values as well?
Yeah, it's a great point. I'm a family man of five, yes, three. Yeah. It's very important to me. I just know the tremendous joy I get out of being a father and having a family. And to your point, there's also a broader community. And in that community, be it your neighborhood, your churches, we all know it's a village, and we all care for each other's children and look after them. So I do think we do need to get back to that. I think the reality is, in our society, though, we are much more transient than ever before. So we lose a sense of that. The other dynamic here, too, is it is a bit surprising probably to learn that most families have five caregiving occasions in their home at any given time. So if you think about an aging loved one, your pet, and the stat that really should get people to peek up is, by 2034, we'll actually have more seniors in this country, right, than children.
Right.
That is it.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll tell you what, you wonder what happens, you know, when you have to take care of your parents. That can be quite difficult, as well as having maybe kids who can't find employment living with you. Hey, here's one thing that popped up. An abandoned ship full of EVs, electric vehicles, the EVs, is burning in the Pacific. Guess what? I don't think that water is going to put that fire out. It's going to have to burn out on its own. Are electrically powered cars really worth it? You know, trucks, cars, buses. They're coming out with different propulsion stuff that runs on hydrogen and other sources. They're getting better engines. For example, I believe it was Honda came up with a very neat engine, which makes running an EV seem unreasonable. Check that one out. Hey, savings. You got to save money for school or whatever. So, how to save $10,000 in 6 months? It's possible with the right strategy. Yeah, if you take and go to our Yahoo website, it's on that list, or not Yahoo website, I'm sorry. This is the Yahoo website, but if you go to our Facebook page, Money and Change / Financially Prepped, you can read about this, how to save $10,000 in 6 months. What about Walmart? Hey, there was an article that was Naveen Anthropoli from Epoch Times. Walmart drones delivering it's coming up to five more U.S. cities. Can you imagine having drones dropping stuff off at your front door? This drone business could be a little bit difficult, you know? I mean, could you imagine the drone drops a package, it goes to take off, bumps into your house and flops? Or it gets snagged in electrical wires and things like that. It's a little scary. But cities like Atlanta, Charlotte, Houston, Orlando, and Tampa are set to have that. Okay, five more U.S. cities. I don't know about that. What do you think about that? Hey, five savings mistakes stopping you from building wealth. We've got just a little bit of time.
According to the 2025 Mind Over Money study by Capital One and the Decision Lab, the majority of Americans are concerned about not having enough money, especially when it comes to saving for retirement and the rising cost of living. My next guest says that there are some key mistakes that can get in the way of building wealth. I want to bring in Brendan Schlagbaum, who is the Budget Dog founder and personal finance expert. Brendan, good to have you here with us. You say waiting to start investing, keeping cash idle, ignoring fees, underestimating healthcare costs, and holding too much cash can be risky. So let's break these down one by one. Let's start with waiting to start investing. Why is that one of the top mistakes you see?
You know, the biggest myth I hear is I'll start investing when I make more money. But the truth is, wealth is created by starting early. So the whole key is to start early, and small amounts really compound. The biggest wealth building factor by far is time. So waiting costs you time, and time is one of those things you just can't buy back, unfortunately. I wish you could.
Oh, me too. So why should you avoid keeping cash idle? This is another mistake that you see.
So as you guys know, most banks are offering, I don't know, 0.00001%. So you can easily move that cash into a high yield savings account. Things like Ally, things like Marcus by Goldman Sachs, and there's not really additional risk, and it's really easy optimization. So it's a no-brainer move for anybody out there holding cash in a typical checking account.
Now, there's the conversation of fees that catch a lot of people by surprise. Why should investors pay close attention to fees?
So fees may look small. You know, you might have a 0.5% there, you might have 1% there, but over 30 years, the reality is that 6 to 7 figures. And these are things like expense ratios, AUM fees, back-end load fees, transaction fees, and you want to overpay for groceries. So why would you overpay for retirement? Let's focus on low-cost index funds and ETFs and just watch our investments grow fee-free in the most easy way possible.
And so one of the other things that we hear far too often, especially those who are close to nearing retirement or in retirement, risks of underestimating healthcare costs. What do you see there? How can you kind of put that on its head and reverse it and set better strategies?
Yeah, so healthcare is one of those big, hairy things that are 30 years in the future. So most of us don't think about this, but the reality is it's one of the biggest expenses in retirement, and people underestimate this. And I know from a personal situation how much healthcare costs can be, because my daughter's situation, she has Dravet syndrome, and these bills have totaled over $200,000 per year the last 3 years. She's only 3 years old. And plot twist, Medicare doesn't cover everything. So things like long-term care, dental, vision, out-of-pocket costs, unfortunately, that's not covered. So you need to have planning ahead with an HSA or something like that, so when the time comes, you have the money to take care of yourself and your family.
Yeah, very key reminder there. Finally here, while we have you, why should you avoid holding too much cash?
Yeah, so with inflation, I don't think that's a secret at this point in time. Uninvested cash loses purchasing power every single year. And most people think this is safe, keeping money in a checking account like we talked about. But over 10 to 20 years, this is a real wealth killer. And the crazy thing is, $100,000 in 2020 or in the year 2000 is now $187,000 today. So the cost of inaction, the cost of doing nothing, is costing more than it's ever been before.
Brendan, thanks for taking the time here with us today. Really appreciate the breakdown. Hopefully we can use some of these mistakes that you've seen to course correct for some other folks viewing out there. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, how about the U.S. debt clock? Wow. $36,954,171,000,000 and rising. That's $107,875 per citizen, and per taxpayer, it's $323,051. Check it out on the U.S. debt clock. A lot of information there. And right now, let's see what we've got on the Doge clock. Wow, that looks like to me it's $511,037,300,000, which is about $4,550 per taxpayer. Boy, the government likes to waste money, don't they? and then they want to tax us more. Seems like to me they ought to be on a balanced budget. You can't spend any more than you make. What do you think? Let me know. And with that, guys, that's all I've got for this week. And I'll tell you what, I want you to go out and have a good week. And we'll talk to you next week on More Money and Change. Hopefully things will be a lot better. Also, hey, check us out on My World. And that's going to be Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And we're live. We'll talk to you later. You have a good week. Save your money. Prep like crazy because you're going to need it. Don't forget those GMRS radios. They come in handy. With that, have a good week, guys. We'll talk to you Wednesday. See ya.